And now, a bit of romance.
Two girls on a quest to find which rom-com is the best. P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hello, and welcome to P.S. I Love Rom-Coms, the podcast about quirky booksellers, costumes that are stellar, and Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I'm Mia.
And I'm Allie. P.S. I Love Rom-Coms is a rom-com review podcast where each week, Mia and I head out to our local farmers market searching not only for fresh produce, but also for an answer to the question, which rom-com is the best rom-com of all time? Will we find the answer, or will we only find fresh raspberries?
Joining us today is the host of Is Anyone Out There podcast. And if she was in a rom-com, she'd be a hard-edged, straight-A student whose sister is the most popular girl in school and who can't date until she does. After the school's bad boy, Patrick Verona, asks her out, she wonders if he truly likes her or if his motivations are less sincere. You guys, it's the one and only Elena Henke.
Hi. Hi, happy to be here.
Now, Elena, we like to start off each episode with a little segment called Which Rom-Com Hero / Heroine Are You Channeling? Where we equate the experiences we've had this week with the famous rom-com hero or heroine. And I can start us off this week. This channeling's a little wild, but this week I'm channeling Cameron Diaz's character, Mary, from Something About Mary. I know. Specifically, a part in the movie that I think me and I both hate, which is the part where, pretty iconic for the film, actually, where she like rubs, I think, semen in her hair and it like sticks straight up and it's like very distracting and like we're laughing at the fact that she has like semen in her hair. You know, not that funny. Doesn't, you know, her date,
that's your week.
That's my week. What was happening was I was at Target, the only place
classic.
I go, wearing two masks. I mean, that's my second home. I was at Target and I was looking for an ottoman. And I know, doesn't that sound like just an incredible evening going to Target to look for an ottoman?
To look for an ottoman. An ottoman is luxury. An ottoman is comfort. It's ergonomical. I'm so happy for you. I hope you
it
got
means
one.
You have all the essentials. You know what I mean? If you're looking for an ottoman, exactly. You've got your life together.
Yeah, you have shelter, food, water. It's like, you know, yeah, an ottoman is splurge. I'm so excited for you.
It's the same with like a candle. It's like, I don't need a candle. I want one. It's
exactly.
An ottoman is something that you want. You don't need, you want.
You never need it.
And I went there and I saw the most perfect ottoman. It was, it was a poof. Do you guys know what a poof is?
Oh, yeah. I know what a poof is. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. You guys know what a poof is.
I mean, of course we do. Am I alive in America in 2021?
Yeah. Okay. Listeners, for those who don't know, a poof is an ottoman that is you crocheted with like a thick kind of sturdy yarn or like rope-like thing in a sphere. And it functions as an ottoman. So I went to Target. I bought this beautiful poof and I was checking out. And the guy who was checking me out was a young Target employee. And I was like, oh, do you want me to take my poof out of my cart? And he just bursts out laughing. I went, are you laughing at my poof? And he like was like, no. And then I like, he's like, no, you can just keep. And then he wouldn't say the word poof. He would just be like, you can just keep it in your cart. I went, I can just keep my poof in my cart. And he's like, yes. And then he was like trying to scan it. And I was like, oh, would you like me to pick up my poof so you can check it out? And then I was kind of played into it, as we can tell. But and so it was very funny. But he would not say the word poof. He was too embarrassed. Which makes me think, is poof, you know,
a sexual word?
Has a double meaning for vagina? Yeah. Is it
poof?
Are young kids calling vaginas poofs?
Oh my God. Are we old?
Are we old?
Yeah. Are we allowed to say dirt? Like, what are we allowed to say? Whatever.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think so. I think anything.
Yeah,
I think
it's like vagina. Cross. Yeah, yeah. Right. That's the dirtiest word, Allie.
Oh my God. Dirty.
No, but I feel like it kind of sounds like a cross between queef and pussy. You know, like
oh my God,
just has,
yeah,
like,
so right.
That
queef. Yeah.
You know, queef. Am I crazy? Oof. Although, no, oh, you're right.
I think you're right. I think we save certain phonetical sounds for like for like dirtier sexual words. And I think poof is like a neutral cross word, but has the like phonetics of a dirty word.
Yeah.
Sometimes people call it like a hoo-ha. And so it's like poof, hoo-ha. Mm-hmm.
Or like, yeah, puss, like puss. Pubic mound. It's like, you know, it's like circling. It's circling something.
But yeah, that's me. Mia, who are you channeling this week?
Oh my gosh. Well, I am channeling the heroine from a movie that I just rewatched. And you guys, it holds up. You wouldn't think it does, but I am channeling Goldie Hawn's character from the 1987 rom-com Overboard. Which has a completely fucked up premise, but it's so good and it holds up. If you can get past the situation that she has amnesia and Kurt Russell sort of kidnaps her, it's so good. And they like play it correctly. Like, she's so awful in the beginning of the movie that by the time Kurt Russell abducts her, it's a no. Okay, I'm digging a hole. I don't.
You're okay agree. With it.
I don't know. No, Elena, yeah. No.
Mia's okay with kidnapping agree. Is what she's saying.
No, I don't agree with the premise of the movie, but I will say if you are going to make that movie, they did all the right things in order to make it make sense. Okay. I don't condone that, but it is a phenomenal movie. Goldie Hawn is incredible. I'm channeling her.
Mia's pro kidnap.
No. Wait, I want to know why.
No. Okay. This is why. Okay. Because it is so, it's honestly just so sad, but it's just, and you know what? I think we're all feeling it. It's like, we're a year plus into a global pandemic quarantine. And my brain is just not what it once was. And I just am forgetting a lot of things. And I, you know, it's just stress. It's just like being in this weird vacuum. So Goldie Hawn like can't remember her life, and she'll be like, wait a minute, maybe. And it will be like this week, like someone will have told me something on a Tuesday, and by Thursday I am like, you never told me that. And they're like, I absolutely told you that. And I'm like, I guess it sounds familiar. And they're like, it sounds familiar because I told you that 2 days ago. And it's happened multiple times. I'm just channeling. I really identify with Goldie Hawn. She's like sort of like, I think I've been to the pyramids, but she doesn't remember that she actually went there. So I'm channeling Goldie Hawn in the 1987.
Amazing.
Very terrible premise, but, you know, surprisingly holds up. Film Overboard.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that's who I'm channeling. Elena, who are you channeling?
I feel like I have two answers to this. And one I'm going to give you is at large for this month, which you didn't ask me this, but I'm going to give you this answer.
Oh, please.
And
please,
then I'm going to give you my week. I feel at large, I this month have been channeling Bridget Jones from Bridget Jones' Diary. Just like this sense of the, you know, people are being vaccinated. I just got vaccinated. This like feeling of like the world is sort of going to reopen soon, maybe, hopefully. And I just feel like Bridget Jones is like a hot mess. And I relate to that all the time. But then like that moment where she's like in the office and she like, you know, tells off the boss who she's sleeping with, and then Respect starts playing. That is how I've been feeling. Just like I'm ready to be a human again in the world. That's my month. But at my week, I would say I'm channeling Meg Ryan in When Harry Met Sally.
Oh my God.
Specifically
which hairdo?
What? Which hairdo?
I said which hairdo?
Definitely the shortest. I just got my hair cut super short.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Yeah. I never look back. It is when she's like having that blowout where she realizes that she's almost 40, but she's like 32. That was my week this week. And that's because last weekend, my sister had a baby shower and she's 5 years older than me. And I went into this whole, and I'm 29, and I went into this whole like spiral of like women, like when, like what age can you not have a baby and when does that need to happen timeline wise and how yeah. How long will I have to meet and date someone before I decide that I would want to have a kid with them? Yeah. So I've got that all figured out for the next person who wants to go on a date with me.
Oh, Elena, the most relatable thing in the world.
I go down that spiral probably every other day where I'm like, my God, where I pull out my calendar and go, okay, what is the latest, you know, like date that I could meet someone, fall in love with someone, or just fall in like with someone and then, you know, mix genetic material with them.
Yeah.
And
if
I wanted to do that at some point. And every year I'm kind of like, I push it back kind of later and later where I'll figure it out.
Yeah. I can know someone for 6 months and it'll be fine.
That's good enough.
And yeah.
Maybe just a solid, good, memorable month, you know? Maybe that's enough.
I mean, and what here, I have two thoughts on this. And the first is that the one comforting truth of all of this is that when it comes, push comes to shove, ladies, we can always settle. We have to.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You get to a point where you're like, well, I gotta have a family. And it's like, yeah, people will be available, you know? So it's like, don't stress too hard.
That is very true. That is very true.
Of a rom-com review podcast.
But like that's okay, so that's my like
fuck romance. We can settle.
Well, I just say that's like my low self-worth thought, but it's also like a way to threaten myself off that ledge where it's like, okay, if you really need this, you can settle. And I go, okay, no. But also, I will say to you, Elena, what Meg Ryan says to Carrie Fisher in the first vignette of this time period in the film, which is, no, the clock doesn't start to tick at 30. It actually doesn't start to tick to your 36, which is, you know, it never starts to tick. Ladies, we can always settle. We can always adopt. There's always options. I just love in that film that for when that film came out, I just think it's so progressive that like in a rom-com, they're like, nope, 30 doesn't mean anything. It's 36. That's when I'll start, you know, when I'll start considering.
Well, I feel like the like through line of it all is just biology. Cause it's like that whole 36 number is like such a thing for like, you know, having kids or whatever. So I feel like that becomes consistent, but yeah, you can have kids the older and older you get, and it's totally fine.
Totally.
And, you know, science makes it easier. You can freeze your eggs. Who needs adoption. A man?
I whenever I have this conversation with a friend, she always reminds me that three of her cousins had children over 36. And if you're listening and you're 36 and you're like, Mia, how dare you? I'm like, no. I just mean this more conceptually. I just mean that we're okay is all I'm saying. The clock is not ticking. We're fine.
We're fine.
We have options. But rom-coms, Austen novels, society at large tries to tell us, you know, that we should stress about this. But it's incredibly relatable, Elena. Speaking of pressure related to family relationships, let's get into our movie discussion, shall we?
Whoa! What an incredible transition by Mia Schaffler.
Thank you. It's my, I feel like it's a new personal record. I feel like I have to beat every week. This week, we watched the 1999 rom-com Simply Irresistible. In this film, subpar chef Amanda Shelton, played by the Sarah Michelle Gellar, is having trouble attracting customers to her late mother's restaurant, which she now runs. While shopping for ingredients, she's given a magical crab by the mysterious Gene O'Reilly, played by Tony Award-winning playwright Christopher Durang. Afterward, Amanda's dishes suddenly become incredibly delicious, inducing strong emotional reactions in everyone who eats them, including Tom Bartlett, played by Sean Patrick Flannery, who is preparing to open his own high-end restaurant.
Simply Irresistible was written by Judith Roberts and directed by Mark Tarlov, who, fun fact, are wife and husband. And wow. They developed this film together because they wanted to write a screenplay that was an intersection of eating and drinking and romance, which achieved. And I'll also add in magic.
Yes. Do not forget.
Do not forget the fourth thing at that intersection, crab magic. So... You guys, what did we think? And Elena, would you care to start us off? Maybe sure. Share a little bit about your relationship to rom-coms and why you chose this one.
Wow. I mean, what young woman doesn't have a relationship to rom-coms? I would say, there's like, you know, some rom-com tropes that just make you feel good. And I think as you get older, you recognize how maybe that isn't good messaging, but it's like you just keep coming back for it. You know what I mean? So that's how I feel about rom-coms. And I kind of think that the more they lean into the rom-com tropes, and I think this is why I like this movie so much, the more they lean into certain things, the better that they get. You know what I mean? Like the more obvious the tropes are. So Simply Irresistible. Where do we begin? I mean, I think what really does it for me is the fact that he works at a department store and buys her an outfit, not only an outfit, but like a ball gown, and that there's a whole dance sequence. I think like that really speaks to me. There's a lot of, like campiness. Like it's very, you know, what's the word?
Magical realism.
There's a lot of magical realism in this movie that just kind of like symbolizes love and romance, and they just go hand in hand. And also there's just like a lot of like things that we don't question. You know what I mean? Like we just are in acceptance of the fact that that's the storyline, like the paper airplane thing. There's a lot of like small like details that you're just kind of like, okay, you know? So that's how I feel about this movie. I mean, it makes you hungry. It makes you lustful. Yeah. It makes you want to shop. It really like tantalizes all senses. That dance floor at the end.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Like what? They float. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, yes, Elena, you're so right. This movie is, I think what like, this was the first time I've seen it. And also.
Which I'm honest, so, I'm just so happy that this is why you had to watch this movie. And that
Elena, this was the first time I'd ever even heard of this movie before.
I'm just so happy that I showed you this.
It was a truly wild film. I mean, the fact that Christopher Durang, what is he doing in this movie? I mean, he's like we said earlier, a Tony Award winning playwright, you know, in a rom-com that is like fluffy and lovely. Like I love this movie. It was like eating candy, like a Three Musketeers bar where it's just sweet and fluffy and like nothing is challenging about it. It's just like kind of like a dream. It feels like a dream after eating a really big meal. Kind of like a sleepy, sleepy, sweet, romantic dream. But it's so wild because after watching it, I was like, "Ha! This is I'd never heard of it before. Why have I never heard of it before?" And the director and writer are husband and wife. And the wife had, I think this is the only movie she's ever written.
And okay, I was going to ask.
The director, this is the first movie he's ever directed. And he is, killed and then it. You're like, how did they, well, that's, how did this get made? And it's because the director, Mark Tarlov, did I say his last name? Yes, Tarlov, is a producer. Like, he produces a lot of films. And so I think this was like, and I'm guessing here, this is me just doing guesswork from stalking on IMDb. I think it's like a friendship film where, like, he was like, I'm going to ask all my friends to do favors and be in my wife and my film. And interesting. And I think that, because it might be how it got made. And I'll say this, it's a lower budget movie. There's a magical crab in the film, which we haven't talked about yet, but we definitely will. that you can see the strings on the crab puppet.
Oh my God.
As it moves. And some of the sets look a little bit more like TV movie than like blockbuster movie. So I think it's like a low budget kind of just like friend movie. And I bet you anything that Christopher Durang is friends with Mark Tarlov or.
Right.
Had to be. What? Because he. And then I looked up, I was like, is Christopher Durang an actor? And he every now and then. But this was his, like, last big thing that he acted in. But, yeah, I mean,
he's great
very...
in it.
Yes. And, yeah, we should go into his character. So he plays this, I think he hints pretty strongly that he's an angel.
Yes.
And he, Sarah Michelle Gellar is like grocery shopping and for her restaurant that she owns. And
at the farmer's market.
At the farmer's market. And he appears magically out of thin air. And he's like, really, like, he's like, oh, I've been talking to your mother. And it's like, but my mother's dead. And it's like, okay. And he's like, it's been a really long trip to get here. Wink, wink. Came all the way from heaven.
You can't forget to also include that he's in like a candy striper, like he's in this, or not candy striper. What are those when they sing in like a barbershop quartet? He's dressed like he's in a barbershop quartet with a straw hat as well.
And yeah. And a basket full of crabs that he pushes on her and only sells for like, I don't know, $60. I don't know if it's expensive
bucks.
Grabs or not. I was like, "You're an angel. You're making her pay for this. Come on, man."
I was like, "They're not free." Like, and then she also just agrees to. She does like, I don't know how to make anything with crabs, and then I don't know where the transition is in that scene. But then all of a sudden, she's like, "Okay, here's $60," and that's it.
Oh my God.
I think it was his angel magic. But my overall opinion was like this movie kind of baffled me at some moments, delighted me at other moments, and then baffled me again. But very pleasant and in romantic and silly. So I liked it. Mia, what did you think?
Yeah, well, so my history with this film is this is the first time I've seen it, but it's not the first time I've thought about it because as a child of the 90s, when I would go to Blockbuster, Hollywood Video, I would be walking around and I would see this movie constantly. And I just never made it on my radar, but I would always see it and I would be like, Simply Irresistible, Sarah Michelle Gellar. Like, this has got to be like, I was always curious about this movie. Having now seen it as an adult, it is nothing like I thought it was going to be. I was like, because at the time Sarah Michelle Gellar was Buffy, she was Cruel Intentions, she was like all these sort of like dramatic, intense characters. So boy was I surprised to see her in this, dare I say, like maybe like more two-dimensional.
Absolutely.
Positive lady role. Yes, and not as not as a criticism, because it was a delight. I mean, at times, my experience with this film, what a wild ride. At times, I was getting, what's the movie? White Christmas? Is that the movie? At times, I was getting White Christmas. At times, I was getting The Room. infamous, like low budget, low budget,
getting,
high budget.
I was getting some Moonstruck. Were you getting Moonstruck?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, yes. I mean, New York, like magical realism, like big theatrical histrionic acting. Yes, yeah. Definitely Moonstruck. This movie was I could never have prepared to watch this film. I'm so glad we watched it. It was, I mean, it was a delight. I love Sarah Michelle Gellar. Like you were saying, Elena, the specifics of the film are so wild. Our quirky like side hobby of our leading hero is that he really wants to beat, what's the guy's name?
Howard Hughes.
Hughes' paper airplane travel record. Obsessed with paper airplanes. Like what an insane specific to choose. Yeah, her stuff, it definitely reminds me, it reminds me of like an improv scene where people are like, well, you're my aunt and here we are. My mom is dead and we have to keep the restaurant afloat. Like the exposition was very funny at times. I adored it. It was so fun. I love the magic crab. The one thing with this film that I'm like, what was happening? The pacing to me was so odd in those intimate one-on-one conversations. I was like, what is happening? Like there was just like so much space given to them. And, you know, maybe since Christopher Durang's in it, maybe they're theater people. I'm not sure. I don't know. Mm. I don't know. But it was, you know, I've never seen a film like it. Oh, yes, please, Elena.
Oh, I was just going to say there's a lot of space, though, without much happening. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of space for staring in this movie. Yes. Like there's a lot of staring at each other. And kind of just soft piano in the background.
Yes, that's what I will say. When we say we feel space, what I was thinking was like, why isn't there a musical score under this scene? Like,
exactly.
They were eating in a restaurant and there was no music happening in that restaurant, which is, it was weird. I was like, oh my God, you can hear everything everybody is saying. And it's very silent. It was a very silent movie at times. And when there was a score, the score sounded like a Hallmarky movie kind of score. Mm-hmm. I bet if they got some like jams in this, like some better scoring, that it could have been like an Indie Darling kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's like a Kissing Jessica Stein.
Yeah.
Like they, and the score was so interesting because I was like, wow, it split down the middle hardcore between what feels like an old timey, like White Christmas rom-com and then like a hardcore 90s, like feel the feel soundtrack. And it was like, you cannot marry those two genres. It was so interesting. I was like, at first I was like, oh, I love the soundtrack that's happening in this film. And then I would be like, okay, now piano instrumental. But I agree, Al. And so it's also, it's like not like they didn't have the budget or the resources for it. So yeah, some of those scenes that were quiet and like
it was
really
a choice.
Slow, it was like, yeah, it was a choice. It was like, what an interesting choice.
I want to talk about our leading lady, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and what I liked about her performance and what I thought was a little distracting. I thought that her and Sean Patrick Flannery's chemistry was very good. There was a scene where there were several scenes in the movie where Sarah Michelle Gellar's character Amanda has a spell from this magic crab kind of cast upon her where she's all of a sudden a really good cook. And not only is she a really good cook, her whatever she's feeling gets imbued into the food she's cooking. And she has a big crush on Tom Bartlett, played by Sean Patrick Flannery. And so like she makes him like this crab dish and then these eclairs. And whenever he eats them, he kind of like feels her love for him. Then he loves her. And there are these scenes where they're like half eating food, half kissing each other,
when they worked for me.
Oh my God.
There was like finger licking, and they would like lick each other's fingers, and then they would kind of kiss, and then they would kind of like lick each other's faces. And I was like, this works for me.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Allie, there were scenes. I mean, for what I felt was sort of like an emotionally, for the majority of the movie, I thought that those two were not going to end up together, because there was a red herring where in the very beginning, a guy at the farmer's market talks to her. And I immediately was like, well, that's who she's going to end up with. So I was like, oh, they're not going to end up together the whole film. And then I was like, oh, they ended up together? Like, oh, I was not expecting that. But I will say, the one thing that got me was the intimate physical moments. I was like, wow, it feels like they had an intimacy coordinator or something, which I'm sure they didn't in 1999. But I agree, Allie, where I was like, whoa, the physical chemistry is happening. And I am like, whoa, 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 what am I witnessing?
I had a friend one time tell me that the face when I see like good food and the face when I see like a cute guy is the exact same. So we'd hang out and she'd like, and we were at a restaurant or a bar or something, she'd be like, good food or cute guy? Like she'd like, that's how she clocked it. And I feel like there's something about this movie that like hits both of those things. So like, you know, in the same scene, that it's very much like a yes. And I wonder if having to eat all of that food, and like, I wonder if that was like a horrible experience for them and they're just killing it in the acting, you know, because it's a lot of like licking and tasting and things to do probably.
Yeah.
However, maybe that's what brought them. Maybe that's what makes them disguises, you know, chemistry. Like maybe that's what made them feel so connected.
Yes, maybe they were all bonding over the delicious food. Like we know in Julie and Julia that Nora Ephron had them all eat actually delicious food, which is so cool.
Yeah.
So I hope that for them. I hope that for them in the past.
Yeah. Also, shout out to the peach moment.
Oh, very, my God. Can we talk about it?
Call Me by Your Name. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying, maybe somebody watched.
The most peach I've ever seen.
I mean.
Somebody watched this movie.
in the movie, there's this scene where Sarah Michelle Gellar has to step in and be the chef at John Patrick Flannery's restaurant who's opening, and she makes this dessert that's this like very juicy looking peach, and when her guests cut into it, a warm, or I don't know if it's warm or not, but a white cream oozes out of the peach, and then a vanilla smoke spurts out of it and into the air. It just like explodes out of it. Like, it's so wild.
Oh my God. And there is another peach scene earlier where her and Sean Patrick Flannery are in the kitchen, and she does what is, I wonder when Sleepless in Seattle came out. She carves a peach in one long curly Q, just like Meg Ryan in Sleepless in Seattle. And then they're like feeding the peach to each other, and it's like very sensual.
And then they start like floating. Right.
And then they float to the ceiling. And that is our central conflict, right? Like, that's why our leads can't be together, is because he's like, wait a minute. We're floating.
You're a witch.
You're a witch. Oh my God.
I mean,
the drama.
That's how a lot of my relationships have ended.
Wait a minute. We're floating. There's the ceiling. You're a witch. Crazy. I don't want to be a naysayer. I know this is 22 years ago. I think some of the food looks good. I want to say, on the whole, some of the food did not look very good to me. Like the crab Napoleon to me looked a little, I was like, oh, that's what crab Napoleon is? I don't want that. When it looked like it was like a square salad with a layer of like raw crab.
It looked like logs. No.
It looked like logs. It looked like logs on a square salad.
But I would have eaten that.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I would have Instagrammed that.
Yeah. And I would have liked a bagel with it. But on that note, can we talk about Amanda Peet? How quickly she's in the movie?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. A very young Amanda Peet making a cameo. At what I would say is like the turn of the movie, where I was like, oh, cool, Amanda Peet's in this, Sarah Michelle Gellar, what a fun competitive duo. And then they eat the Crab Napoleon and then shit starts to get weird. And I'm like, oh, my God. OK, we've taken a turn. I guess I should have known. I guess I would should have known at the crab, Christopher Durang and the crab. But Amanda Peet's character, Chris. Yeah. What a wild
she's
ride.
She's like that scene. Rewatching that, I was like, there are some times where I think that they're legitimately breaking as actors in it.
Yeah,
like,
I saw that. I know. Laughing, yeah, I felt that.
And I'm like, yes. I feel as though that that's not in the scene, that's just the nature of like how bonkers that direction must have been. Like when she starts smearing mashed potatoes all over his face, and then he just keeps the mashed potatoes on his face for the rest of the scene.
Yeah. Yeah. Never wipe them off.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
I also find
Oh, please, sweet.
I find it funny that like Sarah Michelle Gellar is like hung up about like Amanda Peet is like this perfect woman as like
oh my
as
God.
If like Sarah Michelle Gellar isn't like equally, you know, stunning.
I was so mad when they were like, well, she has perfect hair. And it's like, please do not talk to me about Sarah Michelle Gellar's hair. Yeah. Like, please do not frame her layered, beautiful hair that always falls correctly. Like, please do not even start with me, Judith Roberts, Mark Tolov.
Something. Okay. I just want to, I just have to say this, which is, this is one part of Sarah Michelle Gellar's performance, who I love, by the way, that I found a little distracting, is that does she know how to stir anything in a pot? There was something, she like the way she was holding her wooden spoon, it was just like, that's not how you hold a spoon. It was
the food stuff made me nervous. Whenever she was handling food, I was like, I feel like this is wrong.
Where she's like, let me open up a big book to get a recipe. And it was like, what?
The pacing of like them in a kitchen like was hilarious to me. Like they're having like very slow, contemplative conversations about love and dating while they're supposed to be preparing food.
That's so
like
true,
75
Elena.
People.
Yeah.
The kitchen is the most hectic, stressful, not chatty place.
Not in simply irresistible.
In there, it's like a constant conference. Like her, okay, so this movie, I think, maybe has the most egregious use of the black best friend trope I've ever seen.
It's so egregious.
It's like, it was upsetting long term. So her best friend, Nolan Draynor, played by Lawrence Giller Jr., who is fantastic in it. And I thought she honestly had a lot of chemistry with. I was like, hey,
I know. I was
Lawrence
like, maybe they should
together.
End up. Yeah. That's-
yeah. Like there was like definitely chemistry there. It was like, those were the moments where I most felt like the room energy when she would be like, Nolan, we need to talk. And it's like, what are we talking about? And it's like, we're talking about Sean Patrick Flannery. And I was like, what is happening here? Like they're a chef and a sous chef and just having these very slow conversations only revolving around Sarah Michelle Gellar's love life in the kitchen. Which leads me to, I have to talk about maybe I would just say the most memorable scene in the film where Sarah Michelle Gellar is getting dressed to go meet Sean Patrick Flannery. She has Lawrence Giller Jr. come upstairs. First of all, I mean, I don't know how to not go off on a tangent about the doll bit, but I just want to put a little underline for the doll situation.
I forgot about the doll.
I mean,
oh my God.
One of the craziest side character tics I've ever seen in a rom-com where he comes upstairs and Sarah Michelle Gellar says, don't play with the dolls again. And then for the entire rest of the scene, Lawrence Giller Jr. is just like making, I don't know. He's just making, it's like just playing with, it was wild. What a wild choice. And very fun.
What a wild choice that Sarah Michelle Gellar's character
as a grown woman who owns a restaurant and have two large American Girl doll styled dolls on her dresser.
Oh my God.
Yes. She does have an amazing rom-com bedroom, though, I will say.
Oh, of course. Like, huge ass. Yes.
And outfits. I mean, we haven't her outfits in this movie are incredible and on point, and like they're like perfectly like mix matched patterns, and all of them great and iconic and so 90s. Her in those capris,
yes,
and that opening scene, I was like, oh, that's why I bought capris, is because like women like Sarah Michelle Gellar looks incredible in them. But on anybody else, it's like, oh no. Oh my God.
She's also grocery shopping. In espadrilles, which I also loved. Like,
wait, what are espadrilles?
Espadrilles are like the like platform chunky kind of beachy wrap shoe. And I'm just woman is like a chef at a restaurant and first of all, and just buying, you know, the ingredients for what she's making at the farmer's market, and then is also shopping in like heels, essentially.
I mean, I think that's also something that was hard to swallow about the movie. As someone who's worked in restaurants for a long time, was I think the restaurant specifics felt not intimate, where it's like, yeah, like if you've ever met a chef, it's like they are working film industry hours. Like they are on their feet for 16 hours with like one or two days off a week, right? Where it's like, yes, no, they would not be going to the grocery stores in espadrilles. And then there was one line where I lost it, where Sarah Michelle Gellar to her best friend goes, "We did 100 dinners tonight." And it's like, no, those are called covers. Nobody says we did 100 dinners tonight. I was like, what is this? And then she hands him like a stack of what looks like $7 $1 bills. She's like,
and also when we see her cooking those dinners, we see two pots on the stove where she's like, I'm cooking, you know, 100 covers with two pots. What?
And just them.
Just you? Just them too?
No.
But oh, a beautiful fantasy. I would love to, you know, the idea of like cooking, you know, 100 covers with a beautiful updo and makeup and a cute tank top. So many great strappy tanks.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Like there was like a burnt orange halter that I was like, I miss that, and it's coming back. So I was like, yes. I felt feeling the full circle of the fashion. Also, didn't they try to say her fashion was bad at one point? Weren't they like, oh, she's too, her fashion's too quirky?
Yeah, they did, but they did.
It was, well, no. Okay, let's circle back to the scene. Let's talk about the belt buckle thing.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God. Yes.
How have we not talked about this?
Sorry, Elena. Oh my God. Thank you, Elena. That's where that,
I knew that's where, that where
the
was
best
heading.
Friend was going. Bless you. Yes. So
how do we feel about that? I'm curious.
There was a lot to unpack. Do you want to start, Elena?
Well, it's just like that math that they do. Okay, wait, maybe we should preface what we're talking about. So she's trying to get ready. Her best friend slash sous chef, Nolan, comes upstairs because she lives next door. And what does he say? That he saw on Dateline that men think about sex 238 times a day. And then she says, well, that would mean that they would essentially be thinking about sex all day. And he says, yeah. And also, whenever a man holds his belt buckle, like puts his hands on his belt buckle, that's a tell sign that he's thinking about sex. And then she holds up an outfit and he puts his hands on the belt buckle. And that's how she knows that's the one to wear, which also isn't a very sexual outfit, by the way. It's like a very, you know, like cute kind of like, I just found preppy. That funny that's the so first of all, I have to say this was a moment as a probably like 13-year-old watching this movie I genuinely thought
you took notes. You're like pulling out your notebook and you're like writing it down.
Yeah, I was like, oh my God, when I see like a guy put his hands on his belt buckle, I was like, he's thinking of sex.
Oh my God.
Which Judith Roberts knew that when she was writing this movie that she would create a system of thinking in young Elena's mind that this, you know, funny thing is true. I wonder what she would, I mean, wild.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love that you underline that because that is how rom-coms affected us as children. Like we were like, yes. Okay, these are the rules of the road. And so when you have multiple people and it's like they create this world in the film where all the men like know this is true, that you're like, oh, that's what that means.
Yes.
Wild.
And he agrees to it and does also when they meet up and she tells him because it comes up. Oh. And when she's also like evading the question, like she brings it up and then is like, never mind. And he's like, no, why did you ask me why I don't wear a belt? And then they like keep going back and forth. And she like looks into a mirror and is like, I forget what question she asked him, but it's like the funniest. It's like, well, what did you do earlier today? Like, she's like, just like, so obviously evading this belt buckle question. And then he like does this weird math to say that it's once every 4 minutes. And she goes, well, I've been here 20 minutes. And he says, yeah, that's about right. And then she says, well, that's impossible. And he says, why? And she says, because any good sexual thought has to last at least 20 minutes.
And I'm
that line was confusing.
What math a turn.
It was too much math for me at that point.
I was like,
you guys are both horny. Just say it.
Yeah. And I was confused about the character. I was mad because here's what I'll say. I liked the sexual tension between her and Lawrence Gilliard Jr. when he grabs his belt. I'm like, okay, that's working for me. I hate this thing in the 90s that was like, men think about sex all the time. Women, we don't want to hear it. I hate that. Yeah. I hate because I grew up with that. I don't like it. Yeah. It's not true. It's not accurate. And I despise that situation and giving men ownership over sexuality. And women are like, no, thank you, sir. Boo to that. But then when we get to the store and then she does the flip, which is like, well, no good sexual thought only takes 20 minutes. And you're like, okay, wait, what a minute. And you're like, okay, that's cool. But then you're like, but that's also not true, Sarah Michelle Gellar. it's just like, what, what is happening? But I will say points for her, there being a turn where she was like, I am a horny lady too. And I was like, okay, well, fine. I'll take it.
And there were other nice moments where we like, because you're right. It was like, there were times where I'm like, this conversation is so gendered. There were times where like she had agency and she was like leading kind of like in the romance department, like where she would like, she does this look. It was incredible where she like, they're like, he's showing her his restaurant that he's building. And she, like, with her little finger, like, beckons him to, like, come dance with her. And it's like, yes. And then she's, like, the one that's calling him to go on a date. And it was like, yes, that's
totally
cool and good to see and exciting for the 90s.
That's
absolutely
fair.
No, there was, I did feel like a bit of like sexual prowess and like direction coming from Sarah Michelle Gellar. That was very fun.
And I will say, as always, there's always sexual prowess coming from Patricia Clarkson.
Oh my God, Patricia Clarkson.
Oh my God, we haven't talked about her.
Ugh. Lois. Grace is with her presence this film. Lois, what a badass.
I just can't get enough.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
It's a really good point, Elena, that if they do have that conversation that feels gendered and like it's giving ownership of sexuality only to men, wow, is the opposite represented with Patricia Clarkson's character. Who is just trying to
seduce Jonathan. Is that where we're
yes.
going?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. I was going to be like, what is she? She's trying to seduce the Jonathan character and get him on side.
Right.
Wow. Oh, I actually don't want to take it away from Patricia Clarkson yet. So yes. Okay. Patricia Clarkson. Wow. She was also, I think I felt maybe the most natural fit in this film where like Patricia Clarkson is someone who just always makes me feel safe. You know, we're like, like sometimes in this film, it's like, wow, the writing is so strange, but the actors are great. Like, this is what an interesting mix. But anytime Patricia Clarkson was in a scene, I was like, okay, I'm here. I'm paying attention. I'm, you know, focused on you, Patricia, because I believe you're going to lead me to water here.
She's so confident and just like so like unflinching. Like, I think about that scene where she like her character Lois walks into Tom's office and she sees these eclairs that Sarah Michelle Gellar has baked that have her magical, you know, has her crab magic in it. And she takes a bite and she gets all horny and she like doesn't flinch. She just commits and like is kind of like writhing on his couch in a way that is so fearless that I was like, you need to be in more movies. You are giving 110% to this very, you know, low budget rom-com, and bless you for it.
Yes. You believe her no matter what. You're just like,
exactly.
Patricia Clarkson said it. It must be true. Yeah.
Yeah. I 100% agree. And on the theme of women taking charge, here's, okay, I have a question for you too. How many plates do you think that Amanda Peet and Sean Patrick Flannery, how many plates do you think they broke in that first scene?
You mean like in the story?
Yeah. Like, okay. like the eight. Not like the actors. I would say like eight. I thought like three. I thought they broke like three plates.
I would say somewhere between like 4 to 5. Definitely didn't warrant getting 24
plates. Where then it was wild where Sean Patrick Flannery and Amanda Peet break some plates in the restaurant and he's like, I will buy you more plates, send me the bill. And then Sarah Michelle Gellar gets dressed. That getting ready scene is for her to go to the his department store to pick out more plates. And when she gets there, he's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, you sell plates. And then she orders 24 of the ugliest plates in the world that are not restaurant plates. And I was like, what? And then she was like, oh, I've ordered too many. And he was like, no. And I was like, yes.
Yes.
Yes. For three times the amount you need.
Yeah. I'm like, and she also broke all those perfume bottles. And he goes, we're even. He goes, I guess we're even. And she goes, yeah. And then she gets the plates too. And you're like, really sweetening the deal. I mean, there's like so many little moments in the department store. I'm like trying my best not to get to the end of the movie in the department store.
Well, we have to talk about the mannequin in the elevator.
it's like how long can we draw that out? But I will say that like returning to this movie, like, okay, I'm going to watch this movie because I know I'm going to talk about it. And like thinking about what I remembered as a kid, it really for me was like, I just want, and I don't care how this sounds, I'm a fucking grown ass woman, but I want some man to pick out a formal dress for me.
Okay, and then I just
go to a department store while it's closed and put it on. And through a series of opening to like clues, like envelopes and following, you know, that whole treasure hunt to get to the dress.
Yeah. Can I just say something really quickly about that fantasy, which is I have been lucky enough that twice in my life, partners have bought me jewelry. Male partners have bought me jewelry. And both times, Elena, it has been, one time it was a big rhinestone cupcake necklace. Very sweet, good intentions. But I was like, oh my God, it was just off. It was like, this is something I might have worn when I was a little bit younger than I am. And then another time it was like a very big silver flower,
And it was like,
it almost as if it didn't happen would have been better. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. And so yeah. I wonder fantasy, what would happen really if it's like, okay, you know, partner, pick me out an outfit. And I can just imagine it being like, not what I expect. Right.
But you know what? I think that's why it's fantasy. It's because I think, right, like that category of like wanting a man to dress you, right? Like I do believe like that. Like when, like, I believe, like, you know, it's like when 50 Shades of Grey came out, people were like, I just remember like the dialogue being like, oh my God, it's anti-feminist because she wants to be like submissive. And it's like, no. But what you don't get is that sex is illogical and fantasy can be the opposite of what you want in your daily life. And so it's like one of those things where it's like, ooh, a man dresses me in a beautiful dress. It's like, that's fantasy. And in reality, they can't, that kid doesn't work. Totally. So I'm like, yes. But absolutely in fantasy, it's like, it works. It absolutely works.
And it's it's a little bit of like a romantic comedy or maybe just romance. It's a little bit of a trope. Like it reminds me of
Pretty Woman.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah. 10 Things I Hate About You. Side character gets the Shakespeare dress.
Yes. Yes.
For the prom. Yeah.
So clearly I'm not the only one.
No, it's a real thing. It's a valid thing. And then it's interesting because in the reality it does not translate, but in the fantasy, amazing.
It's like that person knows you so well, and that they, you know, or even the most like lovely fantasy, like they know you better than you know yourself.
Right.
The perfect pink dress, and that was a beautiful dress too. Gosh,
Did I get flashbacks? Not to my prom because things had calmed down by then, but my older brother's proms of like prom was spaghetti strap, floor length dress, hair up, like that was prom
in curls.
Yes, every girl. I feel like every girl from the late 90s was like holding a picture of Sarah Michelle Gellar from like 17 magazine to like the hairstylist and being like, I want this.
Yeah.
Or trying to do that. You know what I mean? Like their friends trying to
Totally.
And those little clips. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. The little clips. Exactly. And then I think by the time it got to like my proms, I was like, it was more hair down, whatever you want to wear. But I was like, wow, what a moment. What a moment.
I think it's coming back too. I mean, we don't have places to wear formal dresses yet, but I feel like that look is hopefully making a resurgence.
No, you're so correct.
But it's also just, we just have to spend some more time on this. It's like
the ending. Oh, absolutely.
I love that this is also like the final moment too, which is hilarious pretty much. Fact that it's like an empty department store too, like the spookiness of it and like the different, like, you know, like following the like different notes to take, like, you know, with the paper plane circling back to that.
Yes. It honestly was very evocative of an 80s rom-com mannequin.
Yeah.
Where they're in. That we watched that earlier.
Yeah. This movie reminded me of Mannequin. There is something like romantic about like an empty any location where it's like we're all alone in this big space by ourselves, whether it's like a garden or a department store. But yeah, there's something very romantic about it and spooky.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. It's very romantic. It feels very like fun and frivolous and mannequin. And which is like a wild ending sequence. From him sending the paper airplane all the way into her cab, from her running back to them, him sending down a mannequin with the dress and sending it back up. Wow. Just what a wild.
Them dancing and then floating in the air in front of everybody.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. To the magic angel man, Christopher Durang, being the band leader and to the cutaway.
To the fog.
To all the magical crab in a tuxedo, who's like,
In my mind, he kind of like lifts his top hat a little bit to them. That's like, oh, mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yes.
Kudos, kids.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, guys, we've talked about our favorite moments in the film. We've talked about some of our less favorite moments in the film. Now it's time to talk about some of our classic rom-com tropes that we saw in this film. I can start us off. So in this film, I saw the trope of the dead parent. So that happened pretty immediately. That is a trope we mm-hmm. often see, sort of gives the character some depth, something that's happened we can sort of like connect with. So yes, we find out immediately Sarah Michelle Gellar's character is running the restaurant of her late mother's. Yeah, I mentioned this earlier. There is a trope we really don't like, which is in films that are predominantly white, they will sometimes have a black best friend who isn't like granted an inner emotional life and wants of their own. And that definitely was in this film. Although I think that Lawrence Gilliard Jr. did an amazing job in this film. And it was like a very fun character, but I was definitely like, it was like the amount of energy he put into Sarah Michelle Gellar's love life felt
right.
ridiculous.
He's like only here to serve that
exactly storyline. Yeah. I was like feeling it in this film. I had klutzy lady knocks over stuff, so when she knocked over all the perfumes in the department store. And then okay, so this we have to get into, obviously, the classic most iconic rom-com trope, the meet cute, which I wrote in all caps M-E-A-T, meet cute, because they're at the farmer's market. Angel Christopher Durang has offered her magic crabs. She loses one of the crabs, walks up to the love interest and goes up his pants and bites him in the ankle. I mean, I don't know, guys. I mean, wild. Wild.
Roger Ebert, his review of this film, he gave this film 3 out of 4 stars. And he
he's so and mean he, to rom-coms. Of course, he would love this rom-com.
He loves this rom-com.
Of course he does.
He thinks it's kind of like an ode to old 50s rom-coms. And he loved the crab meat cute.
I was so certain.
A film critic loved it.
I was so certain she was going to end up with that other guy at the farmer's market. but that was just me. Okay, quirky side dream. In films, we often see like our heroes or heroines who have like, you know, in How Sally Got Her Groove Back, she longs to make furniture. In Forgetting Sarah Marshall, he longs to do a vampire rock Muppet opera. In this one, our hero longs to beat Howard Hughes's paper airplane record. So that was given so much time in this film. What a quirky side dream. There's a dance number. Oh my goodness. The amount of dance numbers that happened in this film. Lovely. I do get the homage to the old school rom-coms. Absolutely. Co-workers obsessed with love life on both sides of the aisle here. All of our co-workers are in our business all the time. Montage of the good times in the end when Sean Patrick Flannery is like reminiscing on whether or not he loves Sarah Michelle Gellar. We see a little montage of all the positive times they've spent together. And which sometimes in a movie, it feels good. And sometimes it feels so soon. And like, they're just like re-going over the same few moments over and over again. And that's how it felt in this, but it was still a delight to see. And then another trope that I despise, but it's I don't have to give this caveat every time, but we know that like people fall in love who have different age differences. It's just the consistent portrayal of people with over a 10-year age gap where the woman is younger and presenting them as peers that I find annoying. So in this film, the actors have an 11-year age gap difference. Sarah Michelle Gellar is
Oh my gosh,
and she's playing a 22-year-old and he's playing a 33-year-old, and
gross.
Yeah, so it's just one of those things
maybe,
where it's like
maybe not
exactly where you're like, yeah, people. Maybe that would happen, but in every single film for 30 years, no, right. No. So those are mine. Allie, what did you spot?
I have the best friends end up together. You see like Tom's coworkers, Lois and Jonathan, end up together. I have One Dimensional X.
What
was the character's name who threw the plates?
It was Amanda P, and she was Chris, I think.
Chris, yeah. Amanda Peet, like, throwing plates and being like, I just uploaded my schedule to your schedule, so we're synced. You know, very, like...
Yeah. An unreasonable...
One-dimensional, like, like, businessy businesswoman. X.
Can I circle back to what made me very angry about this, about the age difference casting, was that so they wanted Sarah Jessica. Okay, so they wanted, it was written for Holly Hunter. It was originally written for Holly Hunter. And
oh my gosh.
Interesting.
Who is, I guess she's,
I love Holly Hunter.
Who's amazing, would have been amazing. So she's 8 years older than John Patrick Flannery. It doesn't say why they didn't cast her. Oh, the studio didn't want her. Rude. But then it says they specifically did not cast Sarah Jessica Parker because they felt that she was too old for the part. And Sarah Jessica Parker was 1 year older than John Patrick Flannery. And so they, I mean, and that is what bothers me, is that Sean Patrick Flannery at 33, they're like, well, he's perfect. Let's get a, and Sarah Michelle Gellar was 20 playing 22 or 21 playing 22. And
oh
then,
my God.
Yeah.
Barely legal.
Oh, sorry, 22. Oh no, sorry. She was, maybe she was 22. That's my bad. Okay. My bad. She was 22.
Still.
22 playing 20. Sorry. She's 22 playing 20. And then he's 33 and Sarah Jessica Parker was 34. So that's the kind of double standard that really puts a bee in my bonnet. Okay. Sorry. Back to tropes. Sorry.
I want to add a trope that I don't think we've talked about yet. But this is, people feeding each other food. And whenever there's like any food rom-com ever, food involved, one character will feed another character like they're a little baby.
Oh my gosh.
Chocolat.
Can we
there's
do
baby feeding?
Yes.
Mostly Martha baby feeding.
Baby feeding. Julie and Julia baby feeding. Can we go around the circle really quick? Have you ever fed someone food?
I would have to say yes.
Okay, theory disproven. Theory disproven. Absolutely fine. For me, it's a no. Allie, have you fed someone food?
I was fed Parmesan broth like a little baby.
Okay.
On a date once.
The
and
cheese
it was
stands alone.
So great. It was like, the person I was on the date with was like, I've made this homemade broth. Would you like to try some? And I was like, yes.
Oh my
great.
God. Okay, never mind.
Highly recommend being fed like a baby.
Okay, take it back. Take it back.
Yeah, there is something nice about it, I will say.
All right. Well, I guess I got, you know, guys got to try it.
Don't knock it till you try it.
I guess,
you know
yeah.
I mean?
Why not?
I now picture Mia just leaving like spoons of food around her apartment. And when her
will
dates come over,
someone
she's like,
want to
food?
Mia, want to pick that up? I feel though it's a very private thing for me personally.
Right.
Like, I don't know if I would like that like in public.
Sure,
oh,
sure,
no.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm honestly, I'm rewatching season one of the OC right now. And if you, for those of you who remember Oliver Trask, while he's being evil, he hand feeds Marissa some food. And I said, what the fuck? Far too intimate. Far too intimate. Okay. Sorry. I digress. Allie, Trope, what else do you have?
Oh, I have like spotting a person across the dance floor, like the C's like part, and she's like standing perfectly there in her pink dress, and everyone else is wearing black and white.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he spots her across from the dance floor.
I mean, how good is her? She's the only person not wearing black and white.
She's wearing that awesome pink dress. I don't, those are all the ones I had. Elena, did you spot any that we missed?
I don't think so. I think you guys did a very comprehensive list. I don't know if this is a trope or not, but like the idea of like the man being work obsessed and self obsessed and then the woman, you know, like making him discover that there's like bigger things in life.
100%, kind of, Elena. You've hit on our busy businessman trope. And then I don't know. I guess she's not really a manic pixie dream girl, but that is the function of a manic pixie dream girl.
Oh, she is.
Yeah. I mean
she
so floats.
Is.
She floats.
Her outfits are like quirky. She's like, I wear too many necklaces.
Yeah, totally. And she's like bumping into things.
You're so right. You know. You're so right.
She's a magical crab best friend.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on. Come on.
She's her failing business.
Yeah.
Until she meets him.
Exactly. It's okay. You're right. It's the writing's on the wall there, which brings us to 17 tropes. Pretty good.
Not bad. Pretty good.
Pretty good.
It's a classic.
Classic.
Okay. So we've counted the tropes. We know this is a rom-com, but now it's time to rate it. We here at PS I Love Rom-Coms have an ever-changing list of top five rom-coms. As of now, here are our top five. We have The Best Man, When Harry Met Sally, Love and Basketball, Never Been Kissed, and My Big Fat Greek Wedding. So now, if we choose today, we can put Simply Irresistible on that list, but it has to unanimously, we have to unanimously agree to vote off one of those other top five to replace it with. So what do we think, guys? Does Simply Irresistible deserve a spot on the top five list? And if so, who should it knock off?
I feel like this is like a very like almost like counterculture rom-com. Like it fits the rom-com, but it's so bizarre and out there. It's sort of like a cult following rom-com, if you will.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it really can be compared to these movies, you know? Like these, the movies that you just mentioned are like, you know, truly, like they do the genre justice in a way that Simply Irresistible maybe just doesn't, just is, it's its own thing, you know?
I like want to put it on a list with like Joe versus the Volcano.
Yes.
And like Moonstruck and these chunking, kind of magical
chunking Express.
Maybe, yeah. Like these movies that like these rom-coms that like move more to like magical realism, like where it's like they almost parts of them feel like plays in a way.
Yes.
It feels like they could. Yeah. I don't, because it has like this. It's heightened. It's a very heightened rom-com where it's like not as grounded as I would say like the other five on our list.
Yeah. So like top five heightened reality rom-coms perhaps.
Yeah. Magical
realism. Magical realism. Yeah. What was the one rom-coms. You said? What was the, I'm so sorry. What was the one you said
Joe after? Joe versus Volcano.
What was the one you said after that?
Moonstruck.
Yes. 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 Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I would co-sign that absolutely because it's like, well, I'm so happy that like for my inner child who was at Blockbuster and was always like Simply Irresistible. Interesting. I'm like so glad I finally saw it. And now having seen it, I'm like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. No, it's like, it's just not the same as these five that we have curated. It's just, yeah, it's its own thing. So yeah, I would put it on a list with the top five magical realism rom-coms for sure.
All right. Oh. It is a it's a resounding no, but a respectful no.
But a respectful no. And with because... that and with that respectful reality and use of the word no, it's time for our final segment, Reality Check. In this segment, we test out the tropes and plot devices in the rom-coms we've just watched and see if they hold up in the real world. A plot device we see in a lot of rom-coms is that of the quirk. We see it in films like The Wedding Planner, where Matthew McConaughey's character only eats brown M&Ms. We see it in When Harry Met Sally, with the character of Sally Albright, where she orders everything on the side. And we see it with Tom's character in this film and his obsession with paper airplanes. But what about us? Do we have any notable cinematic or over-the-top quirks? Okay, I'll kick us off. I mean, it would be vulnerable if they weren't so transparent. So these quirks are unfortunately transparent to everyone who knows me. I would say my first quirk is just like a paranoia of being overheard. So if like you've spent any amount of time with me in the last like 15 years, I am constantly terrified of someone overhearing what I'm saying. If I'm saying something that's candid that I would not say to everybody. And it's not that I'm talking shit all the time, just that I don't believe you have to share your opinion with everybody all the time. So, and I have just been burned so many times, like a rom-com character where it's like, there are infinite amounts of times where I thought I was alone or I thought someone couldn't hear me, where it turns out my voice. I mean, in college, people used to be in the courtyard of my dorm and I would see them later and they would be like, I could hear you talking from your room with the window open. My voice would just carry. And I would like, so, and then there was like two times. One time I was talking about somebody and I looked at the people of my dorm and they were fucking standing outside my door. And I was like, oh my God. Another time I was talking about somebody who didn't live in my dorm. I was just talking about them. And out of nowhere, they walked into my dorm room, like out of nowhere. And it was like, how did they get in the building? It was like so insane that I was like, became so paranoid. So anybody who knew me in college was like, Mia is insane when it comes to like, if she's going to say something bad about someone, she's going to like look over, she's going to like scour the room, speak in a low tone, try to avoid it. And then my other quirk, which is like less specific, more, I think more people have it, but I very clearly and like distinctly do not care for physical thrills. I will not be jumping off of a bridge. I will not be going on a roller coaster. I will not be skydiving or bungee jumping. I don't need to, and I never will. And you can't make me, and it will never be fun to me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Oh, thank you, Elena. Okay, so those are mine. Those are, I guess the first one's more quirky. The second one's more of a preference. But I do feel like a lot of women in rom-coms get like pinged for not enjoying physical thrills. And I don't, and I won't.
Right.
So those are mine. Elena, what do you got?
Yeah, I would say, okay, so three that I'm thinking about, I'm like, do I start the weirdest one or do I go more general? Okay. One that feels very rom-com, like almost like the manic pixie dream girl thing is I'm always carrying like too many bags. Like I always have so much stuff on me at all times. And I don't feel necessarily comfortable if I don't. Like I've just gotten used to it at this point. So I'm a bit of a bag lady.
Oh, I love that.
And then I have a track record of fainting.
I'm sorry for laughing.
I shouldn't have laughed.
It's like, no, it's fine. It's because I'm like moving a mile a minute and sometimes I forget to eat and sometimes I faint.
Yeah.
Yes. And that feels kind of like, you know, that's dangerous, but it's still it's very rom-com-y. And then this is like a very specific quirk to me that you would never know this unless you came across this. And I don't know if this could be in a rom-com, but it could definitely work in a movie like Simply Irresistible, which is that I have like a really strong fear of chickens.
Okay.
Like we'll start crying.
Yes.
Oh my God. Okay. Explain.
You will cry?
I will cry.
Like cooked chicken or live chickens?
Live chickens.
Oh my God.
Do not like. Like if I find out someone has like a chicken coop, like a like pet chicken coop, I'm like, well, cool. I'll never go there ever.
So it's like, is it like spiders to you? Is it like,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing. I mean, that's winner, winner, chicken dinner. No pun intended. That's
Mia triggering.
Oh my God. I didn't even mean to say that.
Elena was so vulnerable. You threw it back in her face.
Even mean to say that. Wow. Oh my God. I'm so sorry.
Now you know.
Amazing. Amazing. Allie, what's your rom-com quirk?
Oh man, there are two. I forgot what one of them was, but one I remember is I like keep buying dresses and I will not wear them. I only wear pants. And there have been several situations now where it's like, I'm going out to dinner. I could wear a dress. But I don't.
I know.
But I also keep buying them. And I have at least three dresses in my closet that have tags on them, but I just won't wear them.
Oh my gosh. What style? What style of dress?
Oh my gosh. Like a bright color strappy with like a kind of like fitted silhouette, but not like a bodycon, but like. But like a kind of like a almost A-line but like tighter kind of look to it.
They're very cute.
I've tried them on, but I just can't
wear them. Maybe you need somebody to give you a dress in a department store.
To wear to a dinner.
Put the dress on a mannequin, put my name on it, and
put it in the elevator of your building. No, it's very rom-com-y. It's like reverse 27 dresses, you know? Yeah. It's like at the end of your rom-com, it's like you finally wear all the dresses. Like that's what happens.
Yes. You meet the guy and you feel like wearing the dress.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
I can say something about Allie, a funny quirk about Allie.
Oh, please.
Oh, my God, please.
Allie, I think that's very rom-commy, like, is that Allie writes to-do lists on the top of her hands. And I find that a very funny, like, frazzled quirk.
Yes.
Quirk of Allie's.
Right, yes. Now on my hand, there are two things written. One in pink writing is 2 p.m. And then the other thing written on my hand in blue pen, April 15th.
Ellie, what are those for? What is yesterday's
that
date?
That is a problem. I did forget it. That's a problem too. Is like you have to remember if it was a day that I needed to remember, and I did forget it because I'm also washing my hands a lot. So now it's just very faded.
Oh my God. Okay, well that's the quirk. That's your quirk in your rom com. I think our top quirks would be like Elena's chickens, yours is handwriting. I guess mine would be the like will not say anything bad because you're afraid, or just like someone's always there. Like I have friends that like don't believe me, and then we would be like, it's like if you know me long enough, and you're like, oh, you're paranoid, you don't get it, and then we will be in the most private, random place you've never seen, and at some point in the night, someone's gonna go, Mia, like, what are you doing here? And it's like, I'm just not safe. And I've had friends that like I've known for years that have been like, oh, okay, I get it. Anyways. Okay, well, it seems like reality checks out.
Yeah, it seems like we're a couple of quirky girls here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
worse. On that note, that is our show. Thank you so much for joining us today, Elena.
I had so much fun.
Yay!
Anytime. And
thank you for coming and for being on our show. Do you have any social media things to promote or important romance advice for our listeners?
Get vaccinated.
Yes.
True. That's a very romantic thing you can do for your loved ones, your partner, your friends, your family, your strangers.
You can kiss people's faces. You can kiss so many people's faces. If we all
kiss
got
all
vaccinated.
The faces. Ooh, yes.
You can lick each other's fingers like Sarah Michelle Gellar
sexy,
did.
Sexy.
Yum, 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 yum.
No, that's it. I don't feel like I need to promote anything at the moment.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Well, that's lovely. Vaccination is your romance advice as well. Or do you have a romance advice to throw in
on
top?
It's a kind of dual,
a three
romance
in one
advice.
Yeah.
I would
Elena's
say
promoting vaccination and her romance advice is also to be vaccinated.
Yes.
Yeah.
We wholeheartedly agree with you.
Yeah.
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 Amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you all for listening to the podcast. We have a new episode out every week. And remember to subscribe and rate. And we are brought to you by Campfire Media.
And P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
P.S. I love rom-coms.
I love rom-coms.
Hi, my name is Lauren Ash. You may know me from starring in TV shows like Superstore or She-Ra or Scare Tactics.
And I'm her sister, Christy Oxborough, semi-professional researcher and fully certified internet sleuth.
And together, we are the hosts of True Crime and Cocktails, your new favorite true crime deep dive podcast.
In season one of our show, we extensively researched all of the new Netflix Unsolved Mysteries episodes.
And beginning in January 2021, season two will be a Famous Fatalities edition.
From mysterious celebrity deaths to famous unsolved cases, we'll be bringing you more boozy true crime combos.
So put on your PJs, pour yourself a drink, and join our true crime slumber party. New episodes of True Crime and Cocktails drop every Tuesday.
Campfire.